This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
It's hour two of the nation. Time for some Cowboys Twitter, and there is reaction to Sean Lee's retirement extending across Cowboys Twitter for a lot of the afternoon. He made it official. And congrats on a good career. Maybe we'll have more time to reflect on that. We are excited to have our team with us here, Jeff and Brian, a guy that's actually run a draft with the Eagles there, Brian Broaddus. And his protege, what would you call that?
I'd go the other guy.
Okay, he's your protege?
I'm his little buddy.
Okay.
I think you're like Gilligan?
I think he's taking over the program, man. I really do.
Brian's little buddy, Jeff.
All right. We start with RJ Ochoa. Stephen Jones on 105 Through the Fan says the Cowboys haven't had deep discussions yet on whether or not they'll pick up the LVE fifth-year option. He said they will discuss it after the draft. We'll have more Stephen highlights and the audio of that coming up a little bit later on in the show. You know, I don't know what your guys' insights or thoughts are on this. I don't know how I could come to a decision to say yes for sure on Leighton, and I don't know how the draft changes it, right? It's more about the injury and how good he is, and if we have one extra linebacker, that's fine. But I think the bigger mistake would be to, you know, commit to Leighton Van Der Esch before he's proven that he's worth it.
Especially because, I think I'm remembering this right, I believe with Mo Claiborne, when he was beat up all the time, they declined his fifth-year option, and he still played a fifth year with the Cowboys.
He did.
Because declining a fifth-year option doesn't mean go away, we hate you. It means that after your fourth year, instead of being guaranteed a certain amount of money, you can still sign with this team.
Happened to Byron Jones. I don't mean they didn't decline it, but remember there was some discussion on whether they were going to pick it up.
Yeah.
And it was like, how could you not pick it up? And then they, you know, so, and yeah.
With Van Der Esch, I think it makes all the sense in the world that they, look, first of all, they're not being honest with you, saying that they haven't discussed it, because that would just not make any sense.
Right.
But that's just what they have to say, because whatever that decision is going to be influenced by Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I think they've talked about it, General. Excuse me, I didn't mean to jump in there real quick like that. I think that they have talked about it, and I do believe that you're going to see them address the linebacker situation very early in this draft. And I'm not talking about, oh, let's draft a sixth round linebacker and hope that happens.
Yeah.
I think this thing is going to happen very early, maybe within the first two picks.
Wow. I feel like Brian's really giving us something here.
Remember the rules here. Remember the rules. When Brian says something that might sound obscure like that, just pay attention.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
You got to look for the look in his eyes as well.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
There's a special look in his eyes, and you can pick that up on Twitch or on our fan cam at 105throughthefan.com.
Unless you don't have the camera pointing up at the ceiling like Gavin has.
Well, that could happen
to
me. I appreciate Dalton Miller texting me, letting me know I got to get that corrected for you. Is it the combination of the uncertainty around Van Der Esch and Smith? Is there one they feel less certain about?
I think so. I think that's, you know, that $9.1 million commitment is pretty significant. And they now all of a sudden you're committing 9.1 and then another 7 or so more to Smith.
Our quarterback, Gavin.
Yeah.
It's time to get frugal on these mofos.
Yeah.
If you ain't worth it, it's time to move it along. I don't got the money.
Well, I hear you, man. I mean, it seems like a weird time to pick that up, but if we're going to start like making more prudent financial decisions, I'm for it. I'm here for that. So Parsons at 10, you feel like it's a real possibility.
Think,
one of the first two, aren't you leaning more hard towards 44?
Yeah, I am. I think that to me, if the scenarios play out where you do lose Horn, you do lose Surtain, I think that Parsons would be in the mix there, absolutely, at number 10.
And with him, it is that he tends to depend on athleticism ahead of prep.
Maturity was the only question I felt like that you had to figure out. His situation, is he immature? He's answered. I was talking to some teams earlier that said, hey, he's addressed that with them. He's actually come out and said, hey, listen, I understand there's mistakes I made early in my life. You know, and they're asking him, too, about the hazing stuff as well. Yeah. You know, these are things he's going to have to all – but he's addressing them, but
yeah.
Guy's a heck of a football player. He really,
I mean,
really
hazing
is.
Sucks. You get caught up in, like, sure. The upperclassmen expect it, and it's, like, the whole pack mentality type of stuff. Yeah. I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about young people partying and making a little bit of mistake. If you're super uncoachable and you tell people to get lost and you yeah. know all the answers, that's where I start to wonder how it's going to impact your ability to get better.
I don't think that's his case at all.
Right on. Right on. Okay. So I know in this in the build up to it, we haven't talked much about, you know, actually taking Parsons at 10, but Jeff, if both the corners are gone, I know you'll be wanting an offensive lineman or something, but what would be your reaction? Would you have to fight like disappointment live on the air, or how would you take that in if Parsons the pick Thursday night?
I just think that pick would come with a lot of uncertainty because, for instance, almost any tight end in the history of the draft, if you took him at number 10, I'd be like, what? And then Kyle Pitts exists, right?
Wait a minute. Are you saying that Pitts is available when we have a chance to pick Parsons?
No. I'm just making a parallel here because of the positional value. Because
right? I think they hand that card in, by
right.
the way.
I would take Kyle Pitts and I would be doing, like, we'd do real weird things. I've got a messed up rotator cuff, but I would still try to do a back handspring. It'd be great if they picked Kyle Pitts. But with Parsons, if there's any blemish and you're talking about a position that is not considered premium in the NFL with a top 10 pick, I'm like, oh.
Then you add the maturity. It's just a little too much risk for that pick at 10.
Right. Yeah. Like the production he had at Penn State combined with the physical freak that he is incredibly tempting for any team. But then you throw in, well, some of that's kind of freelance football that he's playing and people are talking about maturity. And it's an off-the-ball linebacker, and you go, ooh.
Yeah.
But if he was one of those guys where it's like everyone on that coaching staff is giving him a ringing endorsement, first guy in, last guy out, character is sterling, loves football with all his heart, no questions whatsoever, and here's his physical profile, and here's his production while he was at Penn State, I'd go, wow, that sounds special. That'll work.
Is he going to impact turnovers?
He could. I mean, he's a good pass rusher. He was asked to do very simple things in coverage, so I don't think he's great at that. But again, you're going to, as an NFL team, you're going to look at it and you're going to go, that guy's a freak.
Yeah.
There's no reason why he can't be a good cover guy. There's no reason why he can't create turnovers.
Yeah, the way to create turnovers is get to the ball in a hurry, and he could get to the ball in a hurry. He could get, you know, when you talk about playing sideways really fast, this guy could play sideways really fast. And so, yeah, I think when you're talking about size-speed ratio, the way he's able to hit, the way he attacks the pocket, sure, this guy can create turnovers for you.
It's great stuff here as we're going through Cowboys Twitter with quite a bit of draft content of Fish. He's coming up here in about 15 minutes. Maybe he'll have more on this, but he's got a story up about the Cowboys' focus narrowing on Surtain and Horn. Dallas is put in the middle of the war room table a discussion about corners, Horn versus Surtain, and both of you guys are saying Horn.
Yeah, both of us are saying Horn. This is one of those. And Stephen Jones was on with us, and we asked him that question about the. And when he gave you a little insight, the long discussions you have. This is the week when you get the board together and you go back around and say, okay, is there any tags up there that you guys are not comfortable with? And that's where all of a sudden then the Horn and Surtain all of a sudden comes into conversation. And the coaches will present somebody, and the scouts will present somebody. Mm. And then they'll go at it. And, you know, hopefully they'll come to a consensus of what they need to do, but they might be at the mercy of teams in front of them.
See, that's where I want the next Hard Knocks to be. I want front office Hard Knocks in the week before the draft when they got their board up and these conversations Brian's talking about.
I'll tell you what, and I wish that everybody out there that loves the draft or just loves football in general could see the passionate speech. And I always talk about the Randy Moss speech that Jim Garrett made on his behalf, and those scouts lined up and those coaches lined up, and it came down to Jerry Jones looking over the tops of his glasses and Jim Garrett. And he said that whole thing about, hey, this ain't the Boy Scouts. This is the NFL. Yeah. And, you know, and really Chan Gailey and his crew, you know, it was a colossal mistake, but a bigger mistake on Jerry Jones for not trusting the scouts and what they were saying there.
Did you say they were lined up like they were going to fight?
It was as close to guys leaning forward in chairs. Now, Jim Garrett was a 60-something-year-old man. I mean, he's not going to fight you, But you talk about when Jim Garrett would stand up,
mm-hmm.
that was his way of saying, you know what, I'm not going to let you guys talk like this. Hmm. I'm going to tell you what I think about. And Garrett's dad was small. I mean, he's a small man. But when he stood up, you knew he was serious about it.
We're getting some great text reactions here from the 469. I'm a Sertan guy. I feel like the dog players get overhyped because they get scouts emotional, the Tack McKinley sort of players. What do you think about that? Does the way Horn
play? Some of that. I think there's probably some of that, that you just really love the way that a guy plays. But it also is, it is contagious and infectious, guys that play that way in football. Yeah. There's a reason that certain teams for different stretches of time, like when Ray Lewis is a Baltimore Raven, obviously he was incredible, but the play style wears off on people. You're able to get people, you talk about it in basketball all the time, how depending on what is your chemistry and what is your energy level, like those sort of things are infectious. And I think Sertan and Horn as prospects are really, really, really close. And so I just look at the guy who will follow guys everywhere that I think receivers hate playing against, and I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you what, and by the way, there is a I heard something this weekend that's very interesting because we heard, was it Pitts talk about Horn?
Yeah.
Or was it Horn talk about Pitts?
It was Pitts talking about Horn.
Okay, they train together. They're with the same group.
Makes sense.
So they're
well played.
So it's one of those, well, let me talk about my brother kind of guy.
Well, and they were both.
That's something to kind of keep an eye on too. But you're right. When you watch the tape, Pitts would turn around and look at him like, get the F away from me. You know, that kind of thing.
And Horn would be going, there's no such thing as illegal contact in college football. I can hit you as far as I want down the field.
Yeah. I mean, so, yeah. But there's these two work together and they train together. So there might be a little bit of brother-in-law going on right there.
845, hazing is one thing a lot of us who played sports went through.
Absolutely.
Sexually assaulting teammates is another thing entirely. Is that what we're talking about with Parsons?
That was the accusation that Parsons, Yetur Grosmatos, and one other guy, that part of the hazing was putting their situations in and around younger players.
No. Okay.
Bottom.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't. Yeah, that's not okay. That's not okay. I'll have to look a little bit more into that before I.
Yeah, that's a. That's an accusation that was never proven never in a court a proven of law or
thing,
anything.
But yeah,
but that was an accusation.
And the texter's not wrong. We've all been part of hazing. I was my freshman year, and then in senior year, what you do is you
at
learn.
Penn State.
Yeah.
After everything, that's blew my. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, and then another, and it was either the same player or another player that at some point he woke him up by. This is all alleged, by the way. But these are the maturity things.
Yeah.
He woke him up by like throwing water on him and then was literally choking him out until the player had to pull a knife on him to get him to stop.
Wow.
So those are the maturity accusations on Micah Parsons.
Well, I'm really sorry to cut you off there.
No,
Brian. I didn't mean
absolutely.
To.
No. Yeah. It's stuff. I mean, you really have to. I mean, he's having to address these things with teams and it's not a pretty picture that way. I'm just agreeing with the texter because hazing is a part of things. It's the rituals and things you go through. But as senior leadership, you do have to protect the younger players. You can't let it get to the point where, like I say, when we got hazed in 82, it was a lot different than what happened in 86 because I was like, myself personally, I'm like, man, I can't let this happen, what happened to us back then. They tried to kill us. And, you know, you can't really do that. You got to, like, make sure everybody's taken care of in that way.
Yeah, that is. They tried to kill you, huh?
Basically, yeah. They it was the point where it was the amount of alcohol and then the physical abuse of getting hit, you know, punched, all that stuff. You know, but that was part of it. That was something that you went through, and that was how you got to be a part of the football team. And
sounds like you're getting jumped in over there.
Oh yeah, it was yeah, and you really can't defend yourself. I mean, that's part of the thing. But like I say, the older I got, the more I understand is, man, you cannot physically. You can make these guys drink and have fun and all that, but don't make it physical violence on him.
Yeah, it sounds like a very traumatic scene for the victims of that. If that story is verifiable, I don't know. You know, I think I would have a difficult time bringing that player onto my team. But you're saying that the coaches on the team felt like he had remedied that, or
everybody that I talked to felt like that he has addressed the situation and tried to answer as many questions and give as much honest answers about it. So we'll see. I mean, I do know though, I do feel like though that this team hunting linebackers, that if things got really bad that they would consider him, and they feel good about the situation.
Did the player who was allegedly victimized leave the program? Are they friends?
No, they're not. If I have it right, and this is a little bit reckless, but it was a guy that was transferring, and so the defender of like Parsons would be like, "Oh, disgruntled guy, couldn't get on the field or whatever." But those were the accusations, and you can find that in print.
All right, we go here on Cowboys Twitter to the Cowboys Wire. They ask, is it a pipe dream that the Cowboys could go safety early in the draft and buck their tradition? If so, here's a look at the prospect for every round of the draft. I'll give you a couple of them here and here. They like Merrig in round one. That'd be a trade back in or a trade down?
That'd be a trade down, yes.
Round two, Richie Grant.
Would be a brilliant pick at 44. Great.
Round three, Ardarius Washington. Is he going to be there?
Would be a great pick,
Gavin,
as well. Yeah.
He might be there in the fifth.
See, okay.
He's under 5'8", so I don't know when he gets picked.
People are looking at him more as a corner than maybe a safety, but he could play. Just line him up and let him go.
Round four, Caden Stearns, Texas.
I'm not a big fan of Caden Stearns, but I tell you what, you watch him his freshman year, you would draft him in the first round, but since then he's acted like he doesn't like football, and he's played like he doesn't like football. And it's like, to me, that bothers me a little bit. He was so great his freshman year, but the last couple of years he hadn't been as good.
All right. And then our final tweet here in Cowboys Twitter is one of Brian Broaddus's favorite, if not his absolute favorite Cowboy of all time. Who comes to mind when I say that?
Darren Woodson?
Yes. NFL Throwback tweeted a nice highlight package of Woody over the weekend. It was his birthday.
Yeah.
Five-time Pro Bowler, three-time champion, four-time first-team All-Pro. 1,350 career tackles put him in the Hall of Fame already.
Yeah.
All right. So salute to everybody whose birthday it was over the weekend, but especially Darren Woodson. All right. When we come back, G-Bag Nation, it is time for Mike Fisher to join us. It's Mavericks game night. It's Cowboys draft week. And all that gold coming up next here in the G-Bag Nation. Welcome back, Nation. It's time to catch up with Mike Fisher. We'll get the very latest on the Cowboys and the Mavericks. Questionable list for tonight's game is growing. Luka with an elbow contusion. Dorian Finney-Smith, left leg soreness. Maxey's got a low back. KP, of course, the ankle. Reddick, right heel soreness. Josh Richardson with a hammy. Segment here is brought to you by Soda, State of the Art, and by Rubin and Associates. If you're drowning in debt, call our guy Mark Rubin, 1-800-LAWYERS. Mark will talk with you personally. Take control of your debt, eliminate your stress, and allow you to live life again. Starts with a simple confidential phone call to Mark Rubin. 1-800-LAWYERS. And thanks to Tim McMahon, who's out there at shoot-around for the Sacramento arena there, and passed along that note. And here he is, Mike Fisher, at Fish Sports on Twitter. And a good afternoon, sir. How are you?
But the good news is Luka just won Western Conference Player of the Week for the third time this year.
Oh, yeah, let's go.
I don't know if that helps you beat the Kings, but it's something. Yeah, we will monitor all that tonight. Obviously, what a fantastic last couple of outings for Dallas. Now, that wasn't the LeBron Lakers, but it was close enough. And maybe it wasn't fully the Porzingis Mavericks either, but their ability to solve the Lakers was really masterful, and that's Luka and that's Rick Carlisle. It took them a little while to figure it out, but they played chess while the Lakers were playing checkers. Let's see if somehow whoever suits up can do it again tonight in Sacto.
Mike, was that more about Mavs playing defense, or did the Lakers just go cold in the second half?
Oh, I do think that the Mavericks, when they have a halftime meeting and Rick reminds them, I think when they go hard on defense, they are capable of being a mediocre defensive team, and I do think that that happened. I also think that when you commit to what the Lakers committed to defensively on their end, because I know we're just sitting on the couch watching TV, but you know they are out there running a marathon for 3 hours. That when you make that kind of commitment on defense, you're giving up the energy somewhere. And so, hey, we're going to double team and trap Luka every single time, all over the floor after half court. That's fine, but maybe we're going to have a little bit of tired legs on the other end, and that might have been a factor too.
All righty, Fish. What else is going on here? Are we getting into Cowboys draft?
Yeah, and I do think we have to take, and maybe. A couple minutes isn't enough, but a tribute to Sean Lee, who just, as Brian Broaddus can attest, tried to do every single thing right. And there's a short list of guys that I know on a fairly personal level who I can say, I mean, there was no shortcuts. There was no grab ass. There was no foolishness. It was just trying to do every single thing right. And I'm not saying he's a Boy Scout, but he's damn close. And Brian told me, maybe we were at the, we might have been in Canton, and you said something about him. He said, if not for the injuries, I believe you said, that's a Hall of Fame talent. Am I quoting you about right, Brian?
Yeah, I felt like that with him. I mean, he just had that ability to make every single play. His health just failed him to where he couldn't.
And some of it, because we talk about, oh, this guy's fragile and this guy's glass, but some of it was so fluky. I was there in Chicago, Brian, you might have been there too, when he just got pounded on the top of the head by somebody's fist. Remember that?
Yeah.
And it gave him a jammed neck. Now, how often does somebody pound you on the top of your head with a fist where it gets you just right so it jams your neck and now you miss time? It's just fluky stuff. But a Hall of Fame thinker, and then he'll remind you whenever you say that, he'll remind you what a great athlete he is. He humbly, he'll remind you that he was a, you know, all-conference basketball player and that he can run and he can jump and he could do these other things. But certainly a football genius, no question. And then, speaking of Canton, I have to, and Gavin, I've told you the story before, but I find it worthy. So we're at some wings place. We're just killing time. You know, the game's tomorrow or whatever, and we're just sitting around. And so I'm over there with my computer, of course, working for 105.3 The Fan, as always, on a Saturday or something.
Grinding.
Yeah, grinding. Mm-hmm. And here comes Sean Lee, and he sits at the table right next to mine. And, you know, we have a nice little visit. And then here comes an older guy, and he looks exactly like Sean Lee. And he walks like him, and he talks like him, and his body's just like him. Everything's just like him. Then here comes another older guy. And by older, I mean, you know, Sean Lee's dad and uncle age, which turned out what they were. Then in comes a guy, and it turns out it's Sean Lee's brother. Then comes an attractive woman, except she looks like an attractive Sean Lee. And then comes in another attractive woman, a little bit older, and she too is an attractive Sean Lee. The whole table was Sean Lee clones. They were his family. And Gavin, the only thing they talked about, I admit to eavesdropping for an hour, the only thing they talked about was linebacking. Man, woman, and child. Whether you were 60, 30, male or female, yeah, what about that Butkus? Yeah, what about that Nobis? That's all they talked about for an hour. It was just evidence to me just how embedded Sean Lee was in his business and his family was too. And I hope if he wants to coach, Brian, they just can't let him out of this building, can they?
No, they can't. But, you know, Sean will go. I mean, he loves California.
Yep.
He loves Southern California. He loves getting on his bike, him and his wife. He loves fish tacos. I wouldn't be surprised if he went around the world trying to find the best fish tacos. You know?
See, if I was him and you could afford to, because they do like to travel.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be a coach today.
No, absolutely not.
But he's so natural at it, and I think you're right. I think the Cowboys might want to make sure they win a little, you know, that they beat the Rams and the Chargers and the 49ers or whoever to the punch. But I do think that he's a Cowboy, and I think he thinks of himself that way. And what I love about what he might do, as opposed to what a lot of guys, they get out of football, they're used to being a star, they're used to making a lot of money. I don't think Sean Lee's going to say, well, sure, yeah, I'm ready. I want to be a head coach. I want to be defensive coordinator. I think he'll pick up a broom when the time is right. If he wants to
work
the Cowboys, yeah, and you know what? He'll be the best damn janitor they ever had around here. One more thing.
Let's get a Taco Del Mar built up there at the Star,
Brian
then, whatever it's going to take.
Brian Cardinal was a good janitor.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. The Leighton Vanderess story, and if you wish with Stephen Jones today on KNC Masterpiece, and if you remember the Byron Jones wrestling match this organization had, remember that, Brian, where we were scratching our heads over, this is 2018, why are they debating about giving him his fifth-year option, about picking it up? It didn't seem like it was that pricey. It didn't. And they debated and they debated and they debated. Then they went to the last minute and finally did it. And then we later learned, okay, well, we think he's worth that, but he's darn sure not worth $15-16 million. Well, we're a week away now from the same kind of decision with Leighton Vanderesh. And that fifth year option, I think, is just $9 million.
Yes, sir.
That does not seem exorbitant. For in
5% of your cap.
Pardon me?
It is 5% of your cap.
For a player that's often hurt.
Yeah, and so they have to debate about the hurt And, of course, that's not going to change in the next week. He says he's better than ever.
Okay.
He swears, I'm coming off that neck. I feel better than ever.
Good.
And wouldn't that be great if that's true? So that's one factor. Factor number two, as Jeffrey has pointed out, you know, what if they draft Micah Parsons? Well, then we need Leighton Vander Esch at $9 million, just a little bit less. And then the other part of this, as always, is Mr. Jeff, deadlines make deals.
They sure do, and as do the decisions you make before that deadline gets there.
Right. It's not a coincidence. Steven didn't say, yeah, we'll make that decision sometime next Tuesday. He said we'll make that decision after the draft. And it's obviously very specifically tied to what might happen over the next couple of days here.
Yeah, you know, I'd have a really hard time because I feel like we're not even sure if he's worth $9 million if he stays healthy. Then you add in the injury thing. If we need linebacker in 1 year, and holy cow, Leighton Vander Esch played like an all-pro and now we're priced out, that's fine. We'll take this $10 million and get a free agent linebacker. You know, I think that would be so out of the realm of what is likely or what is probable. We'll take our medicine if we end up losing out on a great player like this. But it's not trending that way. And we have to stop, like, holding our breath and crossing our fingers and believing in the players we drafted so much that we're making mistakes in you know, that other teams wouldn't.
It is worth noting, this team, in terms of the first round, they draft as many offensive players as they do defensive players. That there's not a big discrepancy there, but they keep the offensive players.
They're better. Their offensive players are better than their defensive players. That's been the mistake. They've used first and second round assets on defensive players. They just haven't been as good, and it might be because the coaches have influenced them in a poor way.
Yeah, maybe so. To your Surtain versus Horn conversation, and I think the world is starting to understand this now. I was told early this morning, narrowing the focus. And that doesn't mean that they're excluding the idea of drafting the tight end, the offensive lineman, the linebacker. But I do think they're trying to drill down on, okay, which cornerback do we like between Surtain and Horn? Do we like one of them so much more than the other one that we've got to move up? Brian, I know you've talked about I think you talk about Carolina at 8 now, right?
Yeah, they might be taking your guy.
Okay, and then there are people in Denver who think, you know, we could still use a cornerback. And I still think, to use a Brian Broaddus NFL phrase, your board's still not wiped out. Because if that happens, then either offensive linemen, or tight end are probably still there, and you still win with the 10th overall pick.
I'm trying to think about how the tight end gets to you. Is that Atlanta not take him at 4? Is that what we're doing with?
For my money, Atlanta would have to trade out of 4.
Okay.
And then somebody gets a quarterback.
Okay.
And then Miami, wait a minute, who's 5?
5 would be
Cincinnati. And that's going to be Chase.
Yeah, I want my LSU receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and now you got 7. Now you got 7.
Yeah, the 6 is the Dolphins.
Yeah, you go pass catcher at 6, pass catcher at 7. 8, you go Rashawn Slater. 9, you go – what are we trying to do? Get Pitts there?
Yeah, that's what you're trying to do.
Take Surtain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think the numbers are in Dallas's favor. Brian, you've got 19 first-round grades, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, if we count the 5 quarterbacks, which don't necessarily all have first-round grades.
4 of them do.
Okay, then where's the line of demarcation between we got to have one. These are premium guys, and then there's a drop off. It's after 10 if you count the quarterbacks. Therefore, the Cowboys are going to get a premium talent at 10. There's no way around it. Agreed?
Yeah, I'm looking at my board the way it is. Yeah, if you but like you said, it depends on. Because, like I say, there's a couple of those defensive ends that I have some injury questions about. Ojulari and Phillips, I have some injury questions about. Xavier Collins could be a linebacker that they like. We talked about Parsons. General's now just terrified about some off-the-field stuff with him. I'm trying to run down
disturbing.
For him right now. So, and Cora Mora is a safety that would they take a safety at that spot, you know? I think Jeff's got a good plan if you got wiped out to take Vera Tucker or, you know, one of those, or Slater if he was there for sure. Yeah.
All right, Slater, who you've discussed as being maybe seen as a guard.
I believe that's where he's going to play.
Okay, but he's still a top 10 player in this draft.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah,
for sure.
And a first round graded player by both of you.
For sure.
Right.
And with all due respect to Connor Williams, he walks in here and starts.
Yes.
I think so.
Okay, and then Tyron Smith goes away someday, and you see if his arms are long enough, and then you go play him at left tackle.
Yeah, the question is, what if he becomes Zach Martin at left guard?
Then you leave him, and you find a left tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do it. You pull a Tony Wise, and we'll play our best five. And so if I'm doing the math on it, I'm going five quarterbacks or so, two wide receivers or so, a tight end or so, the two cornerbacks, a linebacker, a defensive end, and next thing you know, there's 12 guys that merit choosing at 10, meaning you're going to get one of them. In fact, you're going to get your choice of three of them if you believe there's 12 guys that are above that line of demarcation.
Fish, we got to run. Great stuff. We look forward to talking draft with you all week long.
Thanks, boys.
Path to the Draft coverage is brought to you by Pluckers. Head out to one of the 7 DFW locations for the draft day party Thursday, April 29th. All right. Coming up next here on 105.3 The Fan, it's a big sports Monday. NFL Draft Big Board Report, some of the top stories flying in from around the country, next to the nation. Welcome back, Nation. It is time now for an NFL Draft Big Board Report.
Big board.
Well, we got Rangers baseball coming up here for you at 4:20. John Daniels is going to join us, so we're looking forward to that conversation. And coming up at 4, we'll steer you back towards the Cowboys as a Stephen Jones audio. He was on with KNC Masterpiece, and he was asked, would you trade with Washington, who's at 19, if it meant they were coming up to get a quarterback? So that'll be a good discussion coming up at 4, JD 4:20. As the Rangers licking their wounds a little bit coming out of that weekend against Chicago, they got swept.
It happens, Gavin.
Yeah.
It's going to happen to this team sometimes. It happens. Dunning was not going to have a .5 ERA for the entire year. Don't you worry, Rangers fans.
I was hopeful that was going to happen.
Nah, we're going to be okay, though. We're going to be okay. It's fine. It's fine.
We'll especially be okay because, it's draft week here, and that gets us very excited here on your home of the Cowboys. It's a huge draft for the team, and you know, we're hoping not only to give them good draft grades next Monday with everything in our rear view, but, you know, also observe that play out over the summer and into training camp. And right here, we do have an NFL Draft Big Board Report. Our path to the draft is brought to you by Pluckers. Head out to one of the 7 DFW locations for the draft day party Thursday, April 29th. Broadus and Kavanaugh, a veritable dream team, if you will, providing the best coverage on radio.
I've decided what I am. Somebody texted it in, right?
Okay.
Broadus is a guy who worked in front offices, ran an NFL draft and all that. What was it called when, like, Obi-Wan Kenobi was training you? Is that a Padawan?
Padawan.
I am his Padawan.
Okay.
That's what we're going to go with.
I think after 7 years, you're beyond that.
Like, full-blown Jedi?
Yeah, I think you're flying the thing, you know, and swinging the...
Yeah.
The
lifting X-wings out of the swamp.
Yeah, you're flying the plane. Yeah. And you're not just hanging out in the swamp, you know?
Right. You're doing it all, man. Okay. You're halfway
there.
Did
I say that right?
I guess.
I don't know. I mean, you're the Star Wars guy, not me.
I'm not the Star Wars guy.
Well, you're better than that guy just getting trained.
Okay.
You could actually fight.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to say.
All right. All right. Young Luke.
All right. Yeah. We start this NFL Draft Big Board Report not with young Luke or Anakin or anybody from Star Wars, but with Tom Pelissero. And he reports that several teams have been making calls about getting into the top 10 of next week's NFL draft, including the Patriots, who could have their eye on Justin Fields if he begins to slide. Tom Pelissero with the NFL Network. You guys hearing the same? Would you be excited to trade with New England there at 10?
Well, I've just heard that from Tom Pelissero, Gavin. I was talking to Tom, and that's what I heard from him. So, yeah, I knew that. It makes all the sense in the world, because if San Francisco at 3 is really going to make a decision between Mac Jones and Trey Lance, which, by the way, Kyle Shanahan talking today, hilarious. He is having so much fun with people reporting these things. He said they went up to 3 because he said, well, we knew at 3 there were 5 quarterbacks we liked, so we'd be okay. Like, didn't really have a preference. We just thought, yeah, lots of good ones. Let's get on up to 3. And then somebody said, can you guarantee that Jimmy G will be on the roster Sunday? And he said, I can't guarantee that anybody will be alive Sunday.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
Like, damn, that's kind of fatalist
there. A little
dark,
yeah.
Kind of went dark on us. But, you know, if they're really deciding between Trey Lance and Mac Jones, and let's say it's whichever one it is, if the Patriots are sitting there at 15 with Cam Newton as their quarterback for the moment, and you get down to, I'm going to say seven, where Detroit picks, and Justin Fields is still available. In a lot of drafts, Justin Fields is going number one overall. A lot of drafts. So, yeah, I think New England at some point's got to get itchy trigger finger if that's happening, and whether it's at seven or eight, nine, ten, whatever. Yeah, I think the Cowboys could be in play to be a trade-down team. Depends how it happens and how many guys you really like and how comfortable you are with it. But I could totally see if Justin Fields really is going to be tumbling down towards 10, that at some point Bill Belichick is like, yes, please.
Yeah, I've kind of feel like the way that, and I've talked to some people about this, about New England's situation. What New England's going to do is they're going to start, they'll start with Atlanta and see what Atlanta wants for the fourth overall pick, and then they'll work their way down. They used to have a guy that was the general manager in Detroit, used to be a former New England employee. That's no longer the situation there. So what they'll do is they'll go to Detroit next, they'll go to Carolina, they'll go to Denver, they'll go to Dallas, and the whole time they're doing this, they're not offering very much. And they're going to test to see which team might be the most interested to move and then come back with them with a better offer. They're going to call every one of those teams to see, they're going to gauge which team is really committed to standing in there and making a pick, or one that's like going to be wishy-washy and move. If you find one that's wishy-washy and will move, they'll get the best value for that pick. Not the team that's trading out of there, the Patriots will. So that's how they're going to operate here. They're going to call. They're not going to make it. It's just going to be that chum in the water bit.
Yeah.
And they're going to find out which one of those general managers doesn't want to stand in there and make a pick.
If it happens to be you, who do you want at 15?
Me personally,
I think you have to start with, obviously, the list that we have at 10. Somehow Sir Tanner Horn is there, love it. If somehow Rashawn Slater is there. Yeah. I think the names you add to the ones that we always say, at least for me, are Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah.
That's who I would say.
The linebacker safety type of deal.
More so than even Newsom. And I know, Jeff, that you're...
Newsom's the corner.
Greg Newsom, yeah. Northwestern. He's been hurt guy, but he's a really good corner.
Would you take Farley there?
I don't think so. I would understand that pick. I would not make that pick. I would throw in the name Elijah Vera Tucker, offensive lineman from USC. I think he's a really, really good player.
Yeah.
And you might even start talking about pass rushers.
Alrighty. It is the NFL Draft Big Board Report as we're going over some of the biggest headlines from the NFL as Thursday night's round one approaches. Cowboys Wire talking about Cowboys desperately need inside offensive line help, not tackle in the draft. So I think that's really interesting. At left guard, you know, Connor Williams, Connor McGovern, are these guys not working out? Would you say they desperately need that? And I would say it's not depth, but they need a star to come in there because you have plenty of depth there, don't you?
Yeah, I think you would love to have a starter come in. But at the same, like Connor Williams, his contract is up after this next year. This is his last year. And I would think that's the sort of player that you replace. You don't extend Connor Williams. He gave you 4 years. He started, he was okay, and you're moving it along. So if it's the right value, again, I'll come back to the same name. I think the guy who is being undersold this year is Elijah Vera Tucker.
USC.
He played left tackle for USC this year. He was a guard the year before. Slater and Sewell didn't play football this year, but they put out great tape in 2019, and they're really good prospects. Elijah Vera Tucker is also an outstanding prospect that has history of guard, played left tackle last year. So, again, you're looking at the same thing where you get this incredible flexibility where you say, man, I've seen you play left tackle at a high level, and I've seen you play guard at a high level. So if I can bring you in here and you win the left guard job, awesome. If not, it'll be yours for the 4 years after. And if I have a guy get banged up, I've seen you play tackle, and you can do that really well too. That's the name I think is being undersold in this draft class.
No, you're absolutely right. And as I look at my board, I mean, I was just – to me, I was ranking my guys, all my guys on my board, and I started thinking, okay, where do I got these corners? I've got him as my 11th best player. I've got him over Horn, and I've also have him over Surtain.
He's a good player.
As I look at, you know, as I look at the 190 some odd players that, and I've ranked him from 1 to 190, and I have him as my 11th best player at, over both those corners.
Wild card there, Gavin's wide receiver.
Oh, that'd be fun. You don't have got to talk to me long about that. I'm in.
Because depending on how this thing falls, like we did it this morning on the draft show on DallasCowboys.com, and when it's not just one brain working on a mock draft, mm-hmm. things go a lot differently. Like in my brain, all three of the wide receivers are gone in the first 12 picks. But as we're doing it, and guys like
Dane?
I wasn't with Dane today, but Hellman, Bucky Brooks, and Kyle Yeomans. And these are smart guys that are looking, what does this team need? What might they do? And Devontae Smith made it to 15.
Yeah.
And so, like, there is the possibility that you may move down and be like, crap, we didn't mean for this to happen, but look, it's another receiver.
Yeah, I think the only reason that he would go, that he would be in that area is because people don't like his weight. That's it, how he physically looks. I challenge anybody to watch him play on tape. And I know I've talked about him. This is Marvin Harrison to me. That's that. When I watch him play, I think of Marvin Harrison. And Marvin Harrison had a great career. But if you're dinging this guy because he's 170 pounds, you don't get this game.
That would be so much fun to add him to the wide receiver group. It would be very temporary, and I don't know what the long-term outlook would be of the wide receiver position, but holy cow, you know, gives you an opportunity to innovate. I want to see what Kellen Moore's ideas are if you want to roll something out like there.
Well, and all of these things, I think, are longer-term decisions than people want to pretend they are. I think it's a very myopic view of things when you're saying, like, hey, this position is bad right this second, so that's what we should take with our first pick. It's like, well, no, need is going to play in at some point. Of course, it does for everybody. But initially, what we're looking at is you're picking a half-decade player here. And ideally, you're picking a second contract player here.
Yeah.
So we're thinking about a decade. So if you're going to willingly forego a decade of a guy that you think is better because he plays the wrong position, you're wrong. If you take a wide receiver at 15 because he's no doubt the best player available, well, Michael Gallup's contract is up after this year. So for the next 4 years, you have a starting wide receiver that was your best player available. To me, it's always a no-brainer like that. I don't understand the, I think we need to upgrade corner, and so my first pick must be corner. I think that is a crazy way to do it, and it's wrong.
And I'm worried the Cowboys have too much of that going on in their thought process. You know, what they did with Tristan Hill and Taco. And
think about the Taco draft. They basically told us before the draft and after the first round that they were going pass rush, corner, corner.
Yeah,
like it didn't matter who was on the board. They had planned who they were going to pick, and it's like, ew, don't tell me that.
But then again, last year they did it with CeeDee Lamb. They turned around and made that one right. And that's the one, that's your outlier right there. It's like every time you want to say, well, they're focusing on this, well, they took CeeDee Lamb.
But in that case, there was a starting position available. Because you run three wide, they didn't have a third guy. So it wasn't overkill. This one would be like, is he starting if you took a receiver?
All righty. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Great draft conversations continue. Rangers baseball's coming up at 4:20. We'll talk with John Daniels. We have what to watch for in tonight's Mavs game coming up at 5 o'clock. But how about some Stephen Jones audio? Would the boys trade with Washington at 19 if it meant giving them a chance to draft their quarterback? Stephen answers that next in The Nation.